Hey y'all, how's it going? I'm Scott. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Should be a good one today. I've got, what's her name? Catherine. Catherine Crump is going to be on the show today. She's from the ACLU. And she's got this great piece with our friend Matthew Harwood, who's also at the ACLU. It's at Tom Dispatch today. And it's all about the Internet of Things. What life is going to look like around here in the not-too-distant future. It's pretty ugly, man. I'm thinking about moving to a primitive society somewhere where it's going to take longer to implement all this stuff. It's a nightmare. Alright, well, anyway, I don't know. Not to be a pessimist or anything, but I actually read a science magazine about the Internet of Things like 15 years ago. At the dentist office, in fact. Thought, oh, look, a science magazine to read while I wait. And it was about how soon everything will have a little microchip on it and they'll all be online. And they'll all be talking to each other. And it's basically going to build up an electronic, I don't know how else to say it. I don't want to say that. A web? How about that? Around every aspect of your life. Everything you do will be on your permanent record. Everything you've done. From here on, at least. Everything. So, go outside to check the mail, and your door will be talking to the central mainframe. You know what I mean? In effect. You know, like on the Terminator, where we're all slaves and dead. That kind of thing. Dystopia, man, it's coming your way. So she's going to be on to talk about that. ACLU, part of their last-ditch effort to apply old law to stop the technopoly before it's complete. It's a valiant effort on their part. Also, Trevor Tim is going to be on to talk about efforts to reform the NSA. I know, I'm sorry. Don't have a heart attack from laughing so hard that your heart quits on you. Just that, well, you know, I don't know. We gotta try. We gotta do something, right? And I'm not really a big fan of political action, but, well, I mean, it can be useful. It's just, that's not really my role. But, you know, if my view was the consensus among the people, then that's how the policy would be, because it would have to be. So that's my role, is trying to expand the consensus a little bit. Hey, this may be our last chance, at least for a long, long time, to roll back the complete and total police state. It's funny, though, you know, it's an interesting sort of phenomenon. I'm sure somebody's already given a TED talk about this or something, right? About how, you know, perhaps in a way the old law, as it has existed, you know, the Bill of Rights and silly archaic stuff like that, has sort of prevented the complete implementation, at least by the state, of all of the power that they have to implement, really. But the very concept of that old law is becoming obsolete. And so I think it could be, you know, in a way, we'll see many technologies come into play, you know, especially at the hands of the state against us, especially in terms of surveillance and that kind of thing, kind of all at once. Stuff that they've created for use, for individual circumstances, stuff they will create for individual circumstances will be implemented in mass effect, right? And kind of all at once. People don't really see the clampdown coming, not nearly as bad as it's really gonna feel, you know? Well, that's my guess, anyway. I mean, this article, man, I don't want to spoil it, but they're talking about, no, really, and not some kook thing. And this is the ACLU lady writing for Tom Dispatch. That, yeah, of course. I mean, we're going to have high-definition cameras in all the streetlights. which would be really convenient, and it'll save power for the green Earth Mother and everything if we only have the light turn on if someone's around and needs it. And then the light will come on because it's a smart light. But, yeah, it'll be taking pictures of your eyeball as you walk by and registering forever where you were that day. But don't worry, it's just keep safe. Oh, yeah, it's way, way out of control. It's just like George Orwell. That's a big part of George Orwell, cameras everywhere. You never quite know if they have enough employees looking at you with it, but it doesn't matter. It's the panopticon effect, Jeremy Bentham, right? It doesn't matter whether your overseers can actually see you and what you're doing at any given moment. It's just as long as you know that they could be watching you and that you wouldn't know one way or the other whether they're watching you, then you will act as though you're being watched at all times. Well, how's it going to be when, no, really, you're being watched at all times? Like, for example, did you realize... And, you know what, I'm not the guy that proved this or anything, but I think this is pretty much, right? This is in the Snowden docs. Your cell phone location has been tracking you everywhere you go. I mean, come on, all of us now, especially in 2014, we just bring our phones with us freaking everywhere, man. You bring Angry Birds with you to the bathroom, I know you do. But they know that, right? I mean, or at least if they want to go back and look... They can check your GPS data or your triangulation data from your cell phone to which part of the house you're in at any given time and going back for 5 years. I'm not saying that would necessarily be incredibly useful for them to see necessarily, but I said necessarily twice, unnecessarily. But you get the point, though, is they know you better than you know you. They've got everything. And it's only getting, man, it already is out of control. It's only getting, I don't know, what's out of control squared. It's insane. Anyway, so she's going to be on. And Trevor Tim, again, on the NSA reform projects. I guess I meant to kind of wrap up that point. You got to try to reform the thing. You got to have the people on the side of saying, hey, listen, there are some lines you just can't cross. Too much power and authority for these people. And I don't know. Neil Postman said years ago now, what, 10, 15 years ago, Neil Postman said too late. Oh, almost 20 years ago now in Technopoly. He said that any gadget that can be invented will be invented and will be implemented as soon as it's cheap enough to implement it. And there's just no part of American society that has a consensus to want to try to stop it. You know? If there was, for example, you would have seen hundreds of millions of Americans. We have a few hundreds of millions of us rallying around Ron Paul's attempt to pass the Freedom Agenda Act of 2007. Which repealed all of it, right? It repealed the AUMF, it repealed the Patriot Act, and the, at that time, what was called the Protect America Act, which was the temporary FISA Amendments Act, and the Military Commissions Act of 2006, and all it just said, you know what, all of this encroachment is gone. We didn't have a consensus to make it real. It, you know, can be done. Anyway. Seems like people don't really care enough. Or they care enough. They care enough, maybe, but about too many different things at the same time. It's a matter of priorities, you know? It's the empire and the police state. That's what's got to matter most to people. You know, I complained about this before, but I'm going to be a broken record because what the hell, I just thought of it. And I'm not taking a position on this issue. I mean, if I have to, then I'm against any state laws at all. So I'm definitely against abortion laws. But that's what it takes to get Texans to rally, to go down to the Capitol and say hell no, as if they're going to pass an abortion law. Every liberal woman in the state of Texas came to Austin to go and rally and protest behind what's her name that's running for governor now. Yay for her for standing up against the evil right-wing Christian oligarchs and all their crap, which is fine with me, which is great. But what about you know, blowing people up? What about getting fleeced for $1 trillion a year and then the money spent on blowing people up? You couldn't possibly be bothered about that. But your right to have an abortion, that matters, apparently, by judging by the activism, that matters 1,000 times more than any other issue in society, right? Other than you want taxes raised for your government schools or some crap. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Man, I love Gareth Porter's book. I wish I'd finished this chapter this morning. I'm a procrastinator, man. I'm bad. I am bad about procrastination. That's all right. I'll have it finished in the breaks before he comes on later in the show. The book is Manufactured Crisis. Go buy it. It's the ultimate debunking of all this hype about Iran's nuclear program. And boy, is it great. Good old Gareth Porter, man. I don't know what we'd do without him. Alright, so let me get back to that thing here, man. Stuff to talk about. Oh, yeah. So, this got mentioned on the show yesterday in the context of one of those interviews, I guess with Phil. X. That was the name of George Kennan, the guy that wrote the article for Foreign Affairs that basically inaugurated the entire containment strategy of the Cold War era. Which, in fact, was a really bad idea, as John Mueller explains, when the Americans finally got tired of containing, quote-unquote, containing the Soviet Union after Vietnam. And they didn't really object or intervene when the Soviets expanded their obligations into Afghanistan and then across Africa and South America as well. I mean, not in terms of complete takeovers, but in terms of support for those regimes, you know, in Angola and El Salvador and whatever. And anyway, that was what finally bankrupted them, was allowing them to finally expand. Containment was actually helping to prop them up. Isn't that funny? Who would have thunk that? But anyway, so everybody loved this old George Kennan guy. And so he was, you know, Mr. Greybeard, what's his name? And back in 1998, he's dead now, but back in 1998, Thomas Friedman from the New York Times wrote this piece about him. Now a word from X. May 2nd, 1998, Foreign Affairs, now a word from X. And here he is talking about NATO expansion, complaining about NATO expansion. He says, I think this is the beginning of a new Cold War, right? This is 98. He's not saying something Russia did. He's saying what America has done here. And I hope I correctly set up in the beginning here that this is the man most qualified to point his finger at the American empire and blame it if he feels like it. And you can't really argue with that because he's Kennan. If he says America's the aggressor here, that's basically the measure of whether it is. Now, I'm not saying if he was blaming another government, like, say, the Russians for whatever they're doing and using that as an excuse to create empire, that would mean, well, his word is gold on that, too. But in this sense, it's an admission of him about a failure of his own team. It's honesty. You can't argue with it. This is America starting it. I think this is the beginning of a new Cold War, said Kennan from his Princeton home. I think the Russians will gradually react quite adversely, and it will affect their policies. I think it is a tragic mistake. There was no reason for this whatsoever. No one was threatening anybody else. This expansion would make the founding fathers of this country turn over in their graves. We have signed up to protect a whole series of countries, even though we have neither the resources nor the intention to do so in any serious way. NATO expansion was simply a light-hearted action by a Senate that has no real interest in foreign affairs. What bothers me is how superficial and ill-informed the whole Senate debate was, added Mr. Kennan. I was particularly bothered by the references to Russia as a country dying to attack Western Europe. Don't people understand? Our differences in the Cold War were with the Soviet communist regime. And now we are turning our backs on the very people who mounted the greatest bloodless revolution in history to remove that Soviet regime. And Russia's democracy is as far advanced, if not farther, as any of these countries we've just signed up to defend from Russia. It shows so little understanding of Russian history and Soviet history. And now listen close here, or change the channel, do what you want. Of course there is going to be a bad reaction from Russia. And then the NATO expanders will say that we always told you that is how the Russians are. But this is just wrong. So, take that, print it out, and smash your Republican relatives in the face with it. And tell them, all right, smart guy who listens to Rush Limbaugh all day and knows everything, what about George Kennan says you're an idiot? Yeah, conservatism. Being a minor bird for whatever Republicans want you to think. Right? Just like this hilarious thing. Not to change the subject too far off of Ukraine, but do you see this thing about Mike Rogers saying, oh, everyone in the intelligence community knows that Edward Snowden is an agent of the Russians? Mike Rogers, that is, the Republican Party, they're just lying to you. Right? It's like if someone says, stop, it's still a complete sentence, even though it only has a verb, because you, the subject, is understood. You, stop, that's the complete sentence, right? But you don't have to say you. You want to skip to the chase, especially if it's an emergency. Well, Mike Rogers' unstated part of his sentence is, yeah, you stupid idiot conservative dogs, lay down on your bellies. Prone. While I tell you the next lie that you're going to internalize and believe and make true through the strength of your faith. Snowden is a Russian agent. Yeah, except for the NSA and the CIA and the FBI are all on the record saying that's not true. Right? But you don't need to worry about that. You're a conservative. You just need to believe whatever a Republican tells you to believe. Lay down on your belly and believe it, and then repeat it. Oh, that's Snowden. He's a Russian agent. My Republican leaders told me what to believe, and as stupid and completely implausible as that is, that's what I believe. Because isn't that what Russian spies always do? Leak all their materials to the Guardian newspaper? Huh. Let's see. Was that what Robert Ames did? Robert Hansen or Aldrich Ames or Jonathan Pollard or John Walker? Oh, no, that's not what spies do. Spies don't give their documents to the Guardian, you idiots. Hi, I'm a conservative, and I wake up every day, and I just can't wait for my Republican leadership to call me a stupid, retarded idiot right to my face and lie to me right to my face and laugh at me right in my face about what a stupid, damned dog I am. Tell me another one, Mike Rogers. Boy, I sure believe in this government now. Protect me from harm, Mike Rogers. Cry the Republicans on their bellies. With their brains full of nonsense, full of talking points. about subjects that couldn't possibly be true. Yes, Snowden, the Russian agent. Wait a minute, what's he doing in Russia? Obama took his passport away and stranded him there. You idiots. He never had anything to do with Russia until the Democrats stranded him there. How's that for a talking point? It's actually true, and it's against your enemy, Obama, but, oh, Mike Rogers didn't tell you to say that? Or even if he did, it's true, and so it doesn't really stick. It's got to be a lie for you to believe it and repeat it. Is that what it means to be a conservative? To just be a minor bird for things that couldn't possibly be right? Yeah, you know what I heard? I heard Russia annexed Crimea. Yeah, you're right. You know what I heard? The Democrats made them do it. Why isn't that your talking point? That stinker, that rat, that Muslim Kenyan secret agent Obama is trying to get us in a fight with the Russians who have nukes. Why isn't that your conspiracy theory? Because it has the slightest thing to do with reality and so must be rejected out of hand. Yeah, see, America overthrew the government of Ukraine, the democratically elected government. And the Russians, just as Vladimir Putin explained, they thought about it and they said, you know, all this talk about bringing Ukraine into NATO and then overthrowing the government and putting a NATO-friendly government in there, we just decided that, you know what, we don't want to look to a future where we have to go and visit our friends, the NATO sailors, at their new base down in, I can't pronounce it, the naval base there in the Crimean Peninsula, Sevastopol or whatever the hell. And he said, you know what? We just kind of thought that, yeah, no. Right? That'd be like, someday the Russians running the CENTCOM headquarters down there in Tampa, Florida, or something like that. You know, actually, we just decided that we were going to make sure and take back Florida before the Russians put a naval base there. That kind of thing. Basic Monroe Doctrine stuff. And here's Kennan says, I'm right and you're all wrong. Here's Kennan says, to be a conservative Republican in America now, today, is to be dumber than a pile of rocks on fire. Oh, yeah, I heard that America is on the side of good all the time and that the Russians are being bad. Yeah, well, that's pretty good thinking there. Whatever you do, don't use Google and read things that took place, read about things that took place even one day before your narrative begins. I heard that America was trying to surround and dismember Russia. And that if you thought that they wouldn't do something, like try to protect themselves from such an advance by their enemies, us, then you're crazy and stupid. Yeah, that's what George Kennan said. I mean, I'm roughly paraphrasing. Don't people understand? No, they don't. Especially not conservatives. I mean, not that liberals are any better, but I just like making fun of conservatives more. They're dumber. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, y'all, Scott here. You like coffee? Me too. Hey, if you're a true connoisseur, you need to try an amazing new roaster out of L.A., Tonks Coffee. These guys are fanatical about delivering the best coffee beans in the world. They get the beans directly from the growers, roast them, and then ship them to you within 24 hours. They're as fresh as can be. Tonks is a subscription-only service, and they're offering a free sample to listeners to this show. Give it a try. If you like it, you can sign up. Then every 2 weeks, you get a new batch of incredible coffee beans roasted to perfection. If you're hitting the cafe or drive-thru most mornings, this is a better and more economical way to get great coffee. Go to tonks.org/liberty. That's tonx.org/liberty. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Yeah, I just think it's funny. The open contempt that Republican politicians display for their conservative followers. It's just like the old saying, you can fool some of the people all of the time. And those are the ones you want to concentrate on. I sort of imagine Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes and Rush Limbaugh and, I don't know, whatever stupid Republican congressman types, senators, sitting around having a contest to see what idiocy we can get these people to believe. I know, let's pretend that none of us know anything about America's military alliance surrounding and attempting to dismember Russia and overthrow every government friendly to Russia. And let's not mention how the Russians have been bending over backwards under Putin, since Putin came to power, too, have been bending over backwards to kiss America's ass, including Putin being the very first foreign leader before Canada or Britain or our special friend Israel or anyone else to call and say, we will help you kill whoever did this as much as you want. Let's work together. Al-Qaeda's the enemy. Let's get him, dude. I'm at your service, said Vladimir Putin to George W. Bush, and then acted like it and faced down his right-wing national opposition and said, this is the right decision to make for Russia's national security. I said so. You back off. It was a real fight. And that was how he won it, was by being tough and saying, listen, it's in our interest to make nice with the Americans on this, even if that means giving them bases in Central Asia, even if that means turning over our old invasion and supply routes into Afghanistan and whatever they need. I can see why that scares you, but I'm telling you, a good relationship with America is more important. So shut up. Yeah, they don't tell you that, do they? Oh, I heard that the Russians stole Crimea. Yeah, did you hear that the Crimeans loved it? Yeah, the Crimeans thought it was great by a super duper majority. And you could say, oh yeah, but the Russian tanks were pointing their guns at them. No, they weren't. America has elections, if you call them that, under our foreign armed occupation in other people's countries all the time. And in other countries, like, say, for example, in Egypt or in Ukraine, we cancel their democratic elections with coup d'etats when we don't like it. Or we just lock them in prison when we don't like their election results, like in the Gaza Strip, where the majority of the population is under 18, locked in a giant concentration camp. Oh no, but boo-hoo for the sanctity of the referendum in Crimea. Everyone knows, and no one who actually knows anything about it disputes, that the people of Crimea, if you believe in democracy at all, a majority rule at all, by a super majority, supported breaking with Ukraine and going back under the authority of Russia, where they had been a part of the Russian Empire since Catherine the Great in the 1780s. While the Americans were negotiating their peace with George III, which has belonged, quote unquote, to Ukraine since 1954, when it didn't even really matter. It might as well have been still a Russian territory, of course, because that was under the Soviet Union, where the central government ran everything out of the Kremlin. It's only not been Russian territory since 1992. Oh, geez. And one shot was fired. And is it even true? I heard a warning shot was fired. Is it even true that someone died? I read in two places that one Ukrainian soldier was shot. Maybe that's correct. That is hardly an invasion by any stretch. I mean, mostly what happened was the troops left their bases that they leased from the Ukrainians, that they've always maintained there, and took over the rest of the peninsula, more or less. And nobody tried to stop them. But no, if you're a conservative, and if you're the prey of Rupert Murdoch media or Republican Party leaders on talk radio, none of that matters. It doesn't matter that you can go to YouTube and listen to the American ambassador to the EU and the American ambassador to Ukraine plotting a coup d'etat just a few weeks ago. Just a few weeks before their coup d'etat went into effect. Nah, it doesn't matter any of that. Come on, guys. Let's just pretend. Let's just pretend. You know, probably for the conservatives of America, if the Republicans told you that the Indians have invaded Russia and conquered Moscow, you pick subcontinent, Apache, whatever, had conquered Russia, and they were the ones who stole Crimea, I guess you'd believe that too. I guess you believe anything that they tell you. That's what it means to be a conservative, to surrender your neurons to the Republican Party, for them to tell you things that couldn't possibly be true, and to believe those things. Oh, you love believing. And I know it sounds like I'm describing liberals, doesn't it? But it's the same way, either way. That's what's good about me. I mean, aside from everything, is that I'm a libertarian and I've always been a libertarian. I've never been a horrible liberal or conservative in any way, and so I don't have to live down any of those horrible, terrible flaws in my thinking or ideology. I'm just always right about everything all the time. Like, NATO should have been abolished in 1989, much less 1991. But on the day that Gorbachev resigned and the USSR fell and the red, white, and blue flag went up over the Kremlin and the Soviet troops started coming back home to behind the Ural Mountains and the Warsaw Pact ceased to exist, that should have been the end of NATO in an instant. Simple as that. As obvious as that. And now we're going to let these people drum up a new Cold War just so that they can sell some more fighters, put us all back in the brinksmanship game. Of making nukes, selling nukes, and holding the world hostage with a new arms race. I mean, hell, I don't think the Russians want to play because I don't think they can afford it at all. We sure as hell can't. But over there, Lockheed, they don't care about that. Did you realize, maybe you did, I don't mean to be patronizing, but virtually, this whole thing about Kennan saying that the Senate doesn't even care about foreign policy. This is just a lighthearted thing. They didn't even look at it seriously at all. They tossed a few slogans around about the Russian threat, and they passed this NATO expansion, which is just this monumental change. This monumental threat to Russia that will provoke a response that then we claim is, you know, the beginning, as he says here. Of course, there's going to be a bad reaction. And then the expanders will say that we always told you that that's how they are. But this is just wrong. It's really, this whole project was spearheaded by Lockheed. And there's a great article written for Playboy.com, but for your virgin eyes, you can just go read it at CorpWatch.org. That's Pratap Chatterjee's site, CorpWatch.org. And they have reprinted there the entire essay. It's really good, man. It's by Richard Cummings. I've interviewed him about it, too, if you want to listen. Richard Cummings. And the article is Lockheed Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. And it's a lot of how they were responsible for the committee to invade Iraq and make up a bunch of propaganda about why we needed to invade Iraq. But before that, their whole Iraq scam was just a carbon copy of the scam that they had accomplished in the 1990s, which was creating this think tank front group on the Committee for NATO Expansion. And the whole point was just to give them as much money as it took to come up with as much propaganda as it took to justify expanding NATO. And which, of course, the entire scam being, quote-unquote, selling planes to all these Eastern European countries. But, of course, the American people foot the bill for all of this through taxes and inflation and debt. And further payments, interest payments on debt. We're the ones who pay for it all, but it's just a gigantic welfare program. That's all it is. It's just a gigantic welfare program for Lockheed executives to get rid of a bunch of planes, and also risk getting us into a species-threatening civil nuclear war. You know, it's a slight risk, but why not? Why focus on getting rid of the nukes? Why focus on being friends? Why focus on devoting resources towards, you know, more efficient distribution of wants and needs that people had when you can build up your Air Force? Big ticket items, man. That's what it's all about. Some new bombers, some new F-35s and F-22s. It doesn't matter if you can't fly them in the rain. It doesn't matter if they're not stealthy at all. The plan wouldn't be to have a war with Russia, right? But just to sell a bunch of crappy airplanes. Really, really expensive airplanes. And by the way, I recommend you adopt my same phraseology there about the welfare thing here. I mean, I'm not the guy who invented the theory of corporate welfare, but I think it's always best to attack the right from the right. And everyone who works for Lockheed is a disgusting tax parasite. All of them, down to the janitor. All of them. They're holding the rest of this nation hostage. They are the enemy of this society. They are terrible people. And you think about what high dungeon people get in about a single black mother who collects food stamps. And they go, oh my God, you know what I heard? I heard that every black mother in America is getting food stamps, and that's why we're all so broke all the time. And oh boy, is it easy to get people to demonize the poor and the powerless for collecting all of the welfare money. But that's not who's collecting the welfare money. You know who's collecting the welfare money? Come on, yeah, you do. Say it with me now. J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America, and, you know, go on the rest of the list of all the banks. And then, of course, there's the military-industrial complex and all of the arms dealers, etc., agribusiness, and then, you know, maybe a fourth or fifth on the list would be, like, the AARP and things like that. But, no, it's big business. The energy companies, of course. These are the people who are holding, using the government to hold a gun to all of our heads. And this is actually the one and only valuable thing that I think I learned in communism class at junior college. Well, they called it sociology, but it was just why you ought to be a commie like me was basically what the class was. But that was the only thing I learned the whole time I was in there was on the first day where he said... And he had an entirely different point than me, of course. But he said, all of you are on welfare. All of you. You smoke cigarettes, you're on welfare. You drive on the roads, you're on welfare. You live in a house, you're on welfare. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And his point being that government is intertwined in everything and that we ought to just go ahead and accept that and love it. And it's beautiful and wonderful. And we ought to not think that there's anything that they shouldn't do for us, basically, was his point. But my point was that, yeah, you know what? You're right. And the people who have the most wealth and power and collect the most are the worst of us. Seems simple enough to me. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. On March 7th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Council for the National Interest is co-hosting the first ever national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Confirmed speakers include Walt Scheuer, Giraldi, McGovern, Katowski, Porter, McConnell, Weiss, Raimondo, USS Liberty survivor Ernie Gallo, as well as co-sponsors Alison Ware of If Americans Knew and the great Grant Smith of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. That's the national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Friday, March the 7th, all day at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., natsummit.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and coming up later on the show, we got Gareth Porter and Trevor Tim. But first, we're going to talk with Catherine Crump. She's from the ACLU. Let me see here. It says here, a staff attorney with the ACLU's Speech Privacy and Technology Project. And here she's got a piece with our friend Matthew Harwood at TomDispatch.com, Tom Englehart's great site. And it's called The Net Closes Around Us, Invasion of the Data Snatchers. Welcome to the show, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us here. And, man, you scared the hell out of me this morning before I even had my coffee. I'll tell you.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. That was part of the point.
Yeah, well, and the thing about it is the scary part is just how close we are to this entirely new society that you describe us as, destined to be living in here in the very, very near future. Tell us, I guess, first of all, maybe some, you know, people know this about this a little bit, but can you describe for us briefly what is meant by the Internet of Things?
So the Internet of Things is an idea that that instead of browsing the Internet, right, and just sitting on your computer and going to websites, pretty soon everything is going to be connected to the Internet in some way. Your refrigerator, for example, will be able to be connected to the Internet and, you know, perhaps tell you when you run out of food. Your thermostat will be connected to the Internet. And so all of these objects around us, which have been dumb objects, will suddenly become smart. But one of the things that the ACLU is concerned about with this is that this is just going to enable data collection about what each and every one of us does in our day-to-day lives that has not even been possible in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I've been paranoid about this kind of thing for way too long, I guess, and the response from the normals has always been that, yeah, but come on, I mean, what you're talking about is so much data that nobody's going to have that or do anything with it. It's impossible to even imagine that you could really have total information about everybody. I mean, there are 300 million of us. What mainframe could ever keep track of us all? But that argument seems to have really just washed away in the face of, you know, everybody has a 3 terabyte hard drive and super high bandwidth and everything now, and it just seems very possible, even if we don't, you know, really know how many spinning disks they have at the new NSA facility in Utah or something. It doesn't really seem technically impossible anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. In fact, it's not. The cost of storing data has plummeted dramatically. Things that wouldn't have been possible to store a few years ago now can be stored simply and easily. And so I think the whole default is changing. The question used to be that you wouldn't store something unless you really had a reason to. But now that storage is so easy, people think, well, why not store this? Unless you have a special reason to delete data, you tend to keep it. And I think one of the things that's really changing is it used to just be, for instance, as I was saying earlier, when you were surfing the Internet, that you would be tracked. But the big change now is that offline space is going to be tracked extensively, right? So if you go to a store, for instance, increasingly the store is using the signals emitted by your cell phone to figure out, for instance, how long you linger in front of one display as opposed to another. As you walk down the street, your cell phone, again, is creating a record of where you go. And so I think there's a big difference here, which is that it used to be possible to opt out of a lot of this tracking, right? If you didn't want to go online, where we all know we're tracked, you could stop in a physical store. But as technology is continuing to evolve, that kind of opt-out just isn't going to be practical anymore.
Right. Yeah, I guess people might remember Minority Report, where everywhere he goes, you know, every 10 feet or 50 feet or something, there's a camera that's taking a picture of his iris. And so then I guess it starts out with, oh, yeah, they're kind of beaming ads at you. Oh, you hungry? There's a Burger King ahead. We know you like Burger King and that kind of deal. But then it ends up where, you know, it's totalitarian living death slavery, where they literally have, you know, like a Principal Skinner joke on The Simpsons. And that's going on your permanent record. Yet everything about you, every second of your day is going on your permanent record from now on. I mean, nobody's ever had to deal with that before. There's the panopticon where maybe they could be looking at you every minute of the day, but who has ever actually been watched every moment of the day like that? It's incredible to even think of what it's going to be like.
It is incredible. One of the technologies we talk about in our report is called automatic license plate readers, and these are devices that can take pictures of the license plate of every passing car. And while at first you may not care about that because you think, hey, it's my license plate, I'm out in public, what's the big deal? What this technology is being used for is actually tracking people's locations. And there are now companies that have amassed over 1 billion plate hits, so the individual pinpoints of where people have gone. And while some people think where they go in public isn't sensitive, if you add all of that data up, you can get a really rich portrait of people's lives. And some trips are quite sensitive. So if this technology really proliferates, you might be able to use it, for example, to know, you know, who visited a gun range, who went to a particular church, so on and so forth. So One of the things we think we all need to be looking out for are these technologies that are technologies really of mass tracking, right? Because it used to be that the police wouldn't expend resources to investigate someone unless they had a good reason to think they're engaged in wrongdoing in the main part, right? But now, because it's easy, law enforcement agencies and private corporations can simply collect data about many, many of us, the vast majority of us, and they do it just in case it may become useful at some point in the future.
Right. Well, you know, Neil Postman in his book Technopoly talked about this kind of a future and said there's really nothing left in our culture that can withstand it. But one of his real complaints and his fear about how we would live, how we are living now already, is the pretense of automated knowledge where the responsibility becomes outsourced to the computer. So, you know, some algorithm decides whether your three-hop association with someone is relevant to this or that investigation or not, or whether you should have a SWAT raid at your house tomorrow or not is a matter of, and we've even seen this, right, where they, I forgot if, you know, they give you like a number, right? The same way they measure your points for traffic violations or whatever. They give you a threat assessment number. There was a story where they decided that the qualifying factor for this guy getting a SWAT raid instead of the knock on his door was he was known as a constitutionalist. So they went ahead and violated his constitution, kicked his door right in. That kind of thing, right? And it's not really humans making the decision, or at least they always have a computer readout to point at that says, well, this guy scored a six on the system, and a six means a SWAT raid, and then no one has to take responsibility for what happens because it's automated somehow.
Some police departments do seem to be experimenting with that already. The most recent story was about police departments in Chicago, which have tried to use these algorithms to come up with particular factors why people might be suspicious, and then sort of expend more resources to try to, you know, prevent them from ever doing anything wrong. But obviously, the people who are subject to that kind of monitoring are quite offended and rightly feel that they've been singled out, and makes them feel even more alienated from, you know, the system than they would have been previously. But, you know, before all of this, all of these new technologies and mass surveillance arose, it would have been much more difficult to engage in that type of algorithmic profiling of people. But now that's going to be, I think, increasingly common.
Mm. Well, you know, one of the creepiest parts of this thing, I'm so glad that it's you and Matthew Harwood and writing for Tom Dispatcher. I don't think I'd have believed it, the part about the smart, quote-unquote, streetlights. This is the future that I'm going to have to live in 5 or 10 years from now, where the streetlight has a high where all streetlights have high-definition cameras in them, where, again, it's not like there's a pair of police eyeballs necessarily on every monitor, but as you put it in here, I think talking about the blimps and the drones, they'll just be able to rewind and investigate anything that happened anywhere that they feel like. They can go back, and it'll all be stored there.
So I think this is an interesting point, and I think it shows that this technology is just becoming cheaper and cheaper. And so we need not just to imagine the world we live in today, right, where, for instance, a license plate reader, where I was talking about before, might cost $15,000. We need to imagine when these types of technologies, you know, cost pennies, such that they can be installed in every streetlight or in every traffic All right. light. And we need to think about, you know, to what extent do we want to live in that type of world? Because it's actually our choice. One of the actually optimistic things that's happening right now is, I think, particularly because of Edward Snowden's revelations, and especially that there's been a lot more attention to surveillance technologies, and a lot of technologies which previously were secret and therefore completely unregulated, the public is now catching on to, right? So we now actually have a good opportunity to try to put rules in place to limit when the police should use this stuff, because the police alone shouldn't be deciding when they use powerful surveillance technologies. That ought to be a democratic decision. Unfortunately, so far that hasn't happened. The police have simply purchased things when they became available. But I think, you know, if we want to prevent some of the most egregious invasive mass surveillance techniques, then now is the time. This is the time we need to seize the opportunity to try to push back against that.
Right. And I'll always encourage people to support the ACLU. I mean, there's nothing more heroic than suing the U.S. government all day. There's just no question about that. But you know what I wonder? Are you guys on board with the 10th Amendment Center and the nullification fight, because I think people feel like they could even be bothered to try at the state level, where at the national level they just don't feel like they could possibly do anything at all, you know?
You've got about
20 seconds, sorry.
I think one of the most hopeful things that's happening right now is happening in the state legislatures. There have been increasingly bills pushing back at the state level, and I am behind that.
Great. All right. Thank you so much. That's Catherine Crump, everybody, from the ACLU. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. It was fun. Bye.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all the stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American Empire and the war state. Available at scotthorton.org/Amazon.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Man, there's a bunch of news I didn't get to today. Oops. Oh, well. Next up is Trevor Timm. He used to be at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Now he's full-time with the Freedom of the Press Foundation, which is at pressfreedomfoundation.org. And they got Glenn Greenwald and Daniel Ellsberg and Edward Snowden and, I guess, Jesslyn Raddick, I think, on the board over there, doing a real good job. And here he is writing in The Guardian, the House's NSA bill could allow more spying than ever. You call this reform? I don't think I will anymore. Anyway, welcome to the show, Trevor. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you joining us. I didn't call reform. In fact, the first positive tweet I saw about the Obama proposal and the Rogers proposal here for NSA reform, my first reaction was, well, I'll wait until Marcy Wheeler says that it's cool. Otherwise, I don't believe in anything that any of these guys say. So that's the deal, right? There are two big new bills, one by Mike Rogers, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and the other by the president. I guess that is, I don't know if that one's been seen in its entirety yet, but soon to be introduced. I guess go ahead, take us through them and tell us what's so not to believe about them.
Yeah, so there's basically one bill and one proposal. The one bill, which is the one by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers, who has been basically going around and making stuff up about Edward Snowden on the Sunday talk shows for the past few months, about him being a Russian intelligence agent with absolutely no proof this is going on. And actually, other intelligence officials have quietly told news organizations that Mike Rogers just doesn't know what he's talking about, or he knows what he's talking about, and he's purposely misleading and lying. But his bill claims to be this reform bill. You know, he's obviously been one of the biggest NSA defenders, and what it does is it ends one practice, which is the bulk collection of everybody's phone metadata. On the other end, it allows them to have much more leeway to search for information from the phone companies than they would have even had under this program. You know, under the phone records program, the NSA, at least in theory, is only supposed to search information search phone numbers if there is a connection to terrorism, if they can prove it by what they call reasonable, articulable suspicion. But what they do in this bill is actually allow them to go to the phone companies on a much lesser standard. They only need reasonable suspicion that a person is an agent of a foreign power or is associated with one or may know one, meaning that the standard for what they can use this information for is far, far lower. So they could end up what could end up happening is that the government doesn't have the power to bulk collect everybody's data up front, but what they can do on the back end is search it much more regularly for stuff that has nothing to do with terrorism. And that's why I think it could actually end up violating the privacy rights of Americans in more ways than the current NSA program does now. The president's bill now is...
Well, now, hold on a second, because I always thought, and, you know, I should have the language in front of me. It's easy enough to search, I guess. But I thought that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA Act of 1978, that in the first place, what it had always done was provide this FISA court with the authority to approve warrants on exactly that lower standard of evidence, a reasonable belief rather than a probable cause, as long as the reasonable belief is that this person is connected either to a foreign government or a foreign terrorist group, which for those purposes is a foreign government. And then what was so horrible, and that's already, of course, a giant violation of the Fourth Amendment in the first place, which makes no such exemptions. But anyway, then, you know, what Bush's spying program did and what the FISA Amendments Act of 2008 did was provide for all this bulk spying and going after people en masse. So now I'm kind of confused, because it sounds like what you're saying is, I guess the phone companies will have the data and the government will only be able to go and look at it if they have a reasonable belief that this person is connected to either a terrorist group or a foreign power, which, again, I thought was already the standard in the first place. So help me out.
Yeah, so it is really confusing, because that was the standard beforehand for individual FISA warrants. So the government could go to the FISA court and say, this particular person, I want to conduct surveillance on him because I have what their version of probable cause was, which was higher than reasonable suspicion, but lower than what we imagine it to be when they get regular warrants. But at least in that situation, they would go to the court first, and it would only be about that one individual. In this situation, if the Rogers bill were to pass, they could go to the phone companies without going to a judge first. The standard would be reasonable suspicion, which is the lowest standard possible. And when we're talking about agents of a foreign power or people connected to agents of a foreign power in this situation, what they can do is with the situation where they get information two or potentially even three hops out from that individual. So instead of just getting the individual's communications or their records, they're getting the people that they talk to, all those people's records, and potentially all those people's records who those people talk to, which potentially could suck in, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of innocent people that have really no connection to this agent of foreign power, but know somebody who knows somebody who does, and therefore now their data can be searchable. So that's where the real privacy implications come in, that, you know, we're not just talking about individuals they're targeting, but when they target a person in this situation, it then sweeps in thousands and thousands of other people.
Right. Well, and a way to think about this would be, so if I talk to a reporter who speaks with agents of a foreign government, right? Even asking a foreign embassy for an official comment or something, then that means that anyone else in my cell phone is fair game for these guys. Anybody else that I call, as long as I call somebody who called somebody. Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly. And that's always been the real complaint about the NSA's current mass surveillance program, is that, the same thing could happen if somebody was connected to a terrorist. Like if a journalist calls somebody who knows a terrorist, then through that connection stream, then everybody the journalist also talks to is now connected and able to be searched in this database. But now they're going to lower the standard even further, right, to not just terrorism, but foreign powers to do these types of searches.
Well, you know,
and
I already saw this
thing.
It has
the potential for even more abuse.
I saw this thing on, I guess it was the Science Channel. Do they still have that? I don't know. But they talked about this network science and how they figured out that whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon counts for everyone on Earth. And they did an experiment where the challenge was to see if you can send this letter to a professor in New York without, mailing it, but just by handing it off to people within six hops. And from deepest, darkest sub-Saharan African jungles in isolated little villages or the farthest reaches of Outer Mongolia. Literally, they got these letters to this professor in New York by just handing it off to one person who knows somebody who knows somebody who sometimes goes to New York, whatever. And they got all the letters. Every one of them got there in less than six hops. I think it was five. And that's, so in other words, that's everybody on the planet, basically. I mean, maybe there's some Eskimos that nobody knows or something, but
Wow, yeah, that's a really interesting study I've never seen before, but it's definitely true. I mean,
yeah,
we know
they were really, I don't know enough about it, Trevor, but they really talked about it like, wow, this is really a brand new discovery about the interrelationships of everybody. They coined it like it was a brand new branch of science, this network science, brand new mathematical ways of looking at stuff that they had never come up with before. And they claimed, too, that this is part of how They led the clampdown on the leaders of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, too, that this was how they were able to figure out, you know, which were the few hundred people most important to kill to try to nip the insurgency in the bud. And it was such a great success for them. They wanted to try it again in Afghanistan and all of that, too. So it's all based on this same kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't doubt that by 6 degrees you're touching everybody on Earth. We know that just using the average person's phone book, just 3 hops away is going to ensnare millions of people, and 4 hops is probably everybody in the United States. So,
That's amazing.
If you have 6 hops, which, you know, to be fair, we don't, you know, the NSA doesn't actually do 6 hops, but right. That is almost certainly covers the entire world.
Right. And yeah, and at that point, it's close enough. Basically, let the software fill in the gaps. You know, it won't be hard. And then, like you say too, it all goes in the corporate store where it stays, and they don't need any authority to go back over and over and over again and look at anything that they've already ever collected. So, that's really the ultimate loophole there. And I'm sorry, I talked us all the way into the break here, Trevor. But please bear with us. We'll be right back, y'all, with Trevor Tim from the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Follow him on Twitter, Trevor Tim with 2 M's. We'll be right back after this. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm at scotthorton.org and Liberty Express Radio and a lot of other things, too. Let's Google it. I'm talking with Trevor Tim. He's got this piece at The Guardian. The House's NSA bill could allow more spying than ever. You call this reform, and then under that, Obama's proposal isn't much better. And we'll get to Obama's proposal in just a sec. But right before the break there, Trevor, I mentioned the corporate store, and we've interviewed I forget who exactly from the ACLU about that story before, but it's so important. If you could please, you bring it up in your article, if you could describe what that means and what's so important about it, and then we can talk about the Rogers bill. The Obama proposal, pardon me.
The corporate store is really this underreported database the NSA has that Marcy Wheeler has been harping on for months, but unfortunately hasn't really gotten a lot of press otherwise. And it came out of documents that were declassified by the FISA court based on one of EFF's lawsuits. And what the corporate store is, basically when the NSA uses these 2 or 3 hops that we were talking about before the break to get tens of thousands of phone numbers and data on who people call and when they call them and for how long, initially they're supposed to only search for this data when there's a nexus to terrorism. But when they get these tens of thousands of numbers, when they initially search them, they can then put them in this other database. And when they put them in this other database, they can then use this database to search these phone numbers for all sorts of things, do all sorts of analysis on them that doesn't have to meet the requisite requirements for terrorism. They don't have to audit themselves, so we have no idea how much they search this corporate store. And basically, this is a place where the NSA can do all sorts of dirty work with no oversight. And, you know, frankly, we have no idea how much they're using this corporate store and for what. And it's the real scary part because, even though it's incredibly scary already that they have everybody's phone number, at least there are some requirements for them to search the initial database. But in this other database, which could potentially at this point hold the majority of Americans' phone numbers, we have no idea what they're doing.
Mm. Oh, and yeah, I mean, that's really something else. Man, I'll urge people to go and look at especially the ACLU write-up on that, and then, of course, Marcy, as you say, as well. And now, one more thing about this Rogers bill before we go on to the, reported but I guess unseen as yet Obama proposal is about the, he calls it the End Bulk Collection Act, which, you know, maybe he's just making fun of us or something, but is it in this case, as well as the Obama proposal, they want to go ahead and stop having the NSA hold it. They want to have the telecoms hold on to it. But I think I read that in the case of the Obama proposal that there wouldn't necessarily be a mandate for the telecoms to hold on to that data, although I'm sure they could find a way to incentivize it somehow. They're going to still want it. But I just wonder how the Rogers bill treats these questions.
It's hard to tell. If you're talking about the Obama proposal, which, you know, necessarily isn't actually a law yet, or we don't even have a written proposal, basically right. It's just information in the New York Times story, that proposal actually sounds more promising than the Rogers bill does. Unfortunately, we just don't have it written on paper, and so often in the case, the devil is in the details. The Obama administration plan says that they're only going to still focus on terrorism. They also say that they're not going to require any data retention mandates for the telephone companies. They're going to end bulk collection. And that if they have to search for a phone number with the telephone companies, they'll go to a court first. And so this sounds like a reasonable proposal. The problem is we don't, like I said, we don't know the details. We don't know if this prohibits collection of other information like internet metadata or financial records, and we don't know what other capabilities might be looming in the fine print of this bill, so it's hard to say for sure. But I will say that at least from what we heard, the Obama proposal sounds far better than what the House Intelligence Committee is offering.
Right. And I'm sorry, I take 100% responsibility for not forming my question well. I'm sure you missed it, but my fault. I was just wondering about what the Rogers bill says about what the telecoms or whether the telecoms will hold it, not the NSA. Is that the same in the Rogers bill? And then does it have a mandate that they have to hold on to it then or not?
Right. So in the Rogers bill, it does end the initial bulk collection by the government. So it would be the telecom companies holding on to the data. And the other good news is that there is no data retention mandate, so they don't have to hold on to it for 5 years. The telephone companies are already required to hold on to information for 18 months, and so apparently they'll just keep it like that, which is good news. But the problem is if they can start searching this data at a far more regular basis than they do now and getting the two or three hops and then putting it into the corporate store, we still have the same problem we had before and perhaps worse. Both bills try to end the program we all know about, that bulk collection, but it remains to be seen what other types of bulk collection it will prohibit.
Is it too far out for me to suspect that they would just find a loophole and just say, oh, well, forget the Patriot Act, man. Don't worry. We'll just use Executive Order 12333, or we'll use FISA Amendments 207, whatever the hell. We'll just make up some other authority. And what we'll do is, instead of collecting the phone records, we'll just break into all the phone companies' records and we'll copy and paste those. And so that'll be an entirely different process under an entirely different authority, and we'll still have all the information that we want. I mean, is it crazy to think that that's what they would do, or is that pretty much how they operate, these guys?
Well, yeah, that's why it's important that, these bills explicitly say the government cannot bulk collect this information in any form. Not just under this program, the typical NSA response to questions like, do you spy on this particular group of people, or do you collect this particular type of records, usually they say, no, we don't under this program, meaning they have another program which they do that under. And that's how they try to get out of answering questions in public. So it's important that these bills specifically state that they cannot bulk collect. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether any of the bills will actually do that.
Mm-hmm. Am I right that sort of a parallel story is that they had their email metadata program shut down that at some point, I guess maybe the Senate was on their case about it a little bit, that it wasn't doing any good and it maybe it was a waste of money or they didn't really like it or something. But then they went around that, and that was the story of breaking into the Google and Yahoo cloud servers overseas, was that, of course, part of that haul is all that same email metadata. Is that more or less the same kind of thing? Do I even have that right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the NSA basically was collecting internet metadata like it was collecting, like it's been collecting phone metadata until 2011. But again, they couldn't prove this was stopping any terrorist attacks. You know, this is a huge violation of privacy. And so behind the scenes, Senator Ron Wyden and Mark Udall were continually pressuring them for evidence that this did anything to protect us. And it was clear that it was violating privacy. And finally, given that the fact that the FISA court kept asking the NSA questions, which they couldn't answer, the government just decided to shut the program down. But it's important to remember that up until the moment they shut it down, they were defending it tooth and nail, saying that it was vital for national security. You know, we're seeing the same thing here. You know, for months and months, the NSA and the president have been saying that this is a vital tool to protect us. And now all of a sudden they're saying, actually, you know what, we don't need it anymore. We're going to shut it down. And that's really been the overarching problem here is that the government claims that everything that they do is in the name of national security, and they can run roughshod over privacy rules and laws that we have in this country. You know, it's been clear to even the president's advisors, who he picked to run two separate panels to give him recommendations, that this tool is not vital for fighting terrorism and it violates people's privacy. And finally, we're seeing them respond to that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a real big deal that, you know, I think maybe this got a little bit underreported there, where the president, especially I think the second one, the hand-picked Presidential Advisory Council guys of Cass Sunstein and some very Obama loyal people, maybe not all of them, but many of them were, and yet their report said, hey, this is not just not protecting anyone, this is illegal. You're basically, in effect, your memo justifying is lying about what Patriot Act Section 215 says. It doesn't say that. You're pretending that you think it does, but it's not true. You're breaking the law. Right? Didn't it say that?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I mean, that's a real big deal that, like, no, you have to stop right now. You're criminals. Unless you're going to pass a whole new thing, legalize it, which brings us back to where they're at now. And by the way, and I'm sorry, in the last second here, can you talk about the Sensenbrenner bill? Because he was the, I guess, sponsored originally the Patriot Act in the House way back then. That's his Section 215 there. And he has this USA Freedom Act, and that one's supposedly better. In what ways? Can you tell us real quick? Got about
yeah, well, the James Sensenbrenner, who was the author of the original Patriot Act, who no one has ever considered a civil libertarian, you know, he's a Republican from Wisconsin, very law and order. He has been actually incredibly outraged over how the NSA has reinterpreted the Patriot Act to mean they collect hundreds of millions of phone call records, and he actually has the most comprehensive bill. It's the USA Freedom Act, and this will go much farther to limiting bulk collection and mass surveillance than the House Intelligence Bill or any other bills involved. And that's the bill I would really encourage people to get behind and tell their congressperson that they recommend them passing. It's called the USA Freedom Act, and it's like I said, it's by far the most comprehensive reform plan that's on the books right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a wolf in sheep's clothing where buried in there is some terrible further encroachment in a different direction or anything like that?
No. I mean, you know, it could definitely go further than it does right now, but it's the bill that definitely has the most teeth, that the people in Congress that we know care about this issue and are actually trying to fix it are getting behind. And so that's the bill I would trust most at this point.
Okay, great. And tell us in just a couple of words whether it's got some momentum behind it, yeah?
Oh, yeah. The bill has a ton of co-sponsors. It can pass in the House right now if they let it go to a vote And the Senate Judiciary Committee actually starts marking it up and votes it out of committee, then maybe it'll have a good chance in the Senate as well.
All right, great. That's Trevor Timm, everybody, from the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and here he is at The Guardian. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first, and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org, or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, I give up. God dang it, Bobby. Well, I was supposed to interview Gareth Porter, but I can't get a hold of Gareth Porter. Doesn't he know it's 4:30 Eastern time right now? Hey, Gareth, I'm trying to call you. Can you listen to the show? Why doesn't everyone listen to the show? I don't get it. It seems like wherever anyone is, they would have the show on. And that would include Gareth, and he would know I was trying to call him. But, yeah, I guess not. Oh, well. Here I was all cramming the last few pages of this chapter in during the commercial breaks. When I could have been sitting here doing nothing. Oh, well, that's all right. I got plenty of complaining to complain about, man. Don't you worry about that. So, here's the thing. Did you hear this? Yulia Tymoshenko, who was a co-conspirator with George W. Bush in the Orange Revolution in Ukraine back in 2004, and then split with Yushchenko, her other co-conspirator, because she started leaning pro-Putin, but then her former partner put her in prison, and then the guy that they overthrew, Yanukovych, I always call him Yanukovych. What the hell do I know, man? I'm from Texas. Yanukovych, he's the guy they overthrew in the first place, and he was democratically elected again back to power in 2010 there, and kept her in prison. He didn't let her out. He's like, yeah, all right, we'll stay in there. She's a criminal. They call her the gas princess, right, because she figured out how to use politics to divert resources her way. So she's a zillionaire who never worked a day in her life, kind of lady, you know, a politician. And so what happened is now she's been sprung after the American and European coup d'etat there. And she got busted on the phone. You would think that these guys would stop talking on the phone. Hey, stop talking on the phone. The Russians are your enemies, and they're tapping your phones. You stupid idiots, man. How secure do you think that line is? It ain't very secure, apparently. And so, anyway, Tymoshenko, she's going on blah, 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 language I can't understand, but I had the wife translate for me, and basically what she did was, if you just look it up, you can see Tymoshenko latest video is, you know, overheard phone call, whatever, and basically, well, the wife says that the summary at the bottom of the video is a little bit overblown. She doesn't say, turn Russia into a burning field. And she doesn't, in fact, even say raise Russia, like R-A-Z-E, raise Russia, like to the ground kind of thing. She says raise up the world, like R-A-I-S-E, against Russia, she says. Not necessarily in a military way. She does say she would like to shoot Putin in the head, which that's not that big of a deal. And then what really got the headline was she says, ah, nuke 'em, in reference to all the Russian Ukrainians. Bah, nuke them. But what the wife says about that is that, and it's not that the wife is pro Tymoshenko. Trust me, she's my wife. I'm telling you. She's just, you know, translating a little bit better. And she's saying, well, the context there is sort of like just saying blast them. It's not, you know, she's just upset. She's not really saying, yes, I would, I am now planning a nuclear attack on Eastern Ukraine. You caught me, or anything like that, which is how it was being portrayed in some places. It's more just an angry, frustrated lady. But it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. She might as well have said, yes, seriously, I mean it. H-bomb them all to death. Rah, because that's the effect of it. She has just completely and totally jettisoned her last desperate chance at authority if she ever had it. Her, any pretense of her right to rule the people of Eastern Ukraine. When even as a figure of speech, she's saying, blast them all, nuke them all, something like that. Anyway, actually the wife says she didn't know the exact word for nuke as a verb, so she wasn't exactly sure whether that translated or not, but still the point was, ah, blast them, that kind of a, you know, less than cuss word sort of a cuss. Which, whatever. Point being, it's just like, you know, if Barack Obama said, screw everybody west of the Mississippi River, I don't care about them anyway, whatever. Well, you've just given up all legitimacy of your supposed authority over half the country. You can't do that. In fact, that's what really, one of the things that really hurt Barry Goldwater. He was making a crack about, you know, liberal elitists in New York and D.C. and Massachusetts or whatever. But what he said was, America would be a lot better off if somebody just took a saw and cut off the eastern seaboard. Well, sorry, Charlie, but at that point, that was the majority of the population of the country. Right? He was, what they heard was, screw everybody east of the Mississippi River, and they just did not turn out for him. You know? I guess it's up South Carolina. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. She wasn't really saying that I want to see them all irradiated with gamma rays and thermonuclear explosions and stuff. She was just saying that I hate them and I hereby relinquish any pretense that I have of the authority to rule over them. That's it. She's done. And I don't know all about Ukrainian politics. I don't know what the Americans and the European Union are going to do about it. I guess I'm waiting for the next leaked phone call. Hey, Putin, hurry up and leak some more phone calls of my criminal government and their sock puppet co-conspirators talking stupid crap on the phone. I'm loving this. It's great. I wish you would tap my government's phones and put it all on YouTube all the time. Thank you. And hurry up about it. But anyway, I don't know how they're going to handle this, but you know how they're handling the Nazis? Apparently the order's gone out. SS putting SA up against the wall. Do you see this? Well, they didn't shoot him, not yet. But today, the or you know, today their time, maybe last night for us. There was a SWAT raid. Let's see, BBC, was this the guy? Oh, they did kill him, Mushchenko. Ukraine far right leader Mushchenko dies in police raid. And this guy was, God, the picture they show him with the BBC, there he is with some, like, wannabe Nazi badge on his camouflage, you know, uniform, whatever. Here he is, he was from the right sector, the Privy Sector. And these guys are the Ukrainian nationalists who, their Davy Crockett is Bandera, who conspired with the Nazis and participated in anti-Jewish pogroms. You know, not fought against the Soviet Red Army on the battlefield, or maybe to some degree, but no, participated in the Nazi war against civilians. This guy, Stepan Bandera, and he's their hero. And but so anyway, it looks like maybe, you know, they're starting to feel the pressure. The Americans are starting to feel the pressure for supporting a coup that included so many Nazis. Hey, they got the job done. And seizing all the government buildings and driving the president out of town. That's what you wanted, right, Obama? And, no, I didn't want that. I just accidentally hired Robert Kagan's wife to run my Eastern Europe policy. Uh-huh. But now, apparently, the order has gone out. Hitler has now made his compromise with the German army that he's going to turn against his old buddy, Rom. The old stab in the back. Different kind of stab in the back, I guess. I don't know. I'm mixing metaphors. Sorry. Anyway, so I don't know if the CIA's behind this or who's behind this. But and I don't know if this is just the beginning or if we're going to see more like this. Will it be this Svoboda party sicking the secret police on right sector? Or will it be actual Eurocrat types like Yatsenyuk at the behest of the Americans taking out both of those guys, both of those groups, and marginalizing them? You know, the neo-Nazi denial is not working in this case. It's just, it's the internet, man. You can't stop it. Too many people know. Too many people have seen pictures of this guy, Tanny Bach, with his Hitler salute in the air. Who salutes Hitler except Hitler saluters? And what's the consensus about people who salute Hitler? At the very least, we don't give them money and help them overthrow governments. I thought that was what we thought. That was what a lot of people thought the policy was. To not install neo-Nazis in power in any European country for any reason. What are you, crazy? And they've gotten positions. It's not just that they seized the buildings. They took over 8 top spots in the Ukrainian government, including the head of the national police, etc. So I don't know if this is, I don't know who's turning on who here exactly. But it seems like it's the most marginal for propaganda purposes, right? The guys who are really the Nazi street tough types with the, you know, proud SS lightning bolt logos. And somebody's got to, you know, take these guys down a few pegs because it's starting to look bad. People over at foreignpolicy.com are starting to question what the hell is going on here. And look at this, man. I can't get over this. This is just, tell me if this is just me or this is just out of this world. I mean, come on. Ukraine, Svoboda party building close relations with Germany's neo-Nazi NPD party. Yeah, the neo-Nazis in Germany go by the name the National Democratic Party. They're best friends with Svoboda. America's sock puppets. They're one of the most important right-wing parties we have. The Nazi declared about Svoboda.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. So this is the IB Times, International Business Times, and I admit I don't really know who that is. But anyway, it's by Jack Moore. You can read it yourself and see what you think. Svoboda party building close relations with Germany's neo-Nazi NPD party. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Wait, I'm pretty sure it is a big deal. You know, the question here really, folks, is whether the American people are going to tolerate a new Cold War. Tom Knapp wrote a thing for C4SS, which hilariously denies the Nazi-ness of America's sock puppet, or at least attempted sock puppet allies there in Ukraine, who have not just kicked the former president out of power illegally, but also seized some of the highest positions of the government. I don't get that. I don't get where that supposedly was just made up by RT or something like that. But the rest of the article sound. The rest of the article is about, well, I don't know. It's at least half sound. It's about how badly the military-industrial complex in America would like to get into a new Cold War with Russia. They're willing to risk nuclear war to have a Cold War if they can. Because it's simply all just about cashing in.
there, you know, to ask a Lockheed executive to have a foreign policy contrary to the interests of Lockheed for some greater national interest is just, it's kind of fairy tale land, you know? The idea that, you know, the guys over at General Dynamics and Honeywell would say, well, look, I mean, government, you guys have enough H-bombs now. We're going to go ahead and retool and figure out better ways to distribute food for profit, you know, instead. That just doesn't make sense. As far as they're concerned, the government can never possess enough H-bombs. Do you remember back a few years ago when they were pushing START II? And I guess they did eventually pass the START II treaty. But we interviewed this guy, Darwin Bond Graham, from the Los Alamos Study Group, which they're anti-nuclear activists and whatever, so okay, bias. But anyway, it was great because what he was doing was he was going through all the amendments and riders that were being attached to the START II treaty in the Senate. Oh yeah, we'll pass your treaty as soon as we add so many amendments onto it that we make it say the opposite of what it says, then we'll pass it. And so instead of really rolling back America's nuclear weapons project, they're just expanding it and promising a whole new generation of weapons, plus refurbishing all the old ones. And you know we're going to need some brand spanking new facilities to do all the refurbishing in. And this is all in there. $1 zillion worth of nuclear weapons, sorry, thermonuclear weapons industry rent seeking. It's no different than any other one of Nancy Pelosi's constituents saying, I want something for free. Your blood and sweat. And there's no limit to what they'll do. In fact, you know, think about what you already know about lobbying. I mean, usually it's not cast in these nefarious of terms, but what everybody already knows, the consensus about how Washington, D.C. works. People aren't cynical enough about it. They're cynical in a shrugging kind of way instead of being really angry about it. But everybody knows that you can bribe a congressman with a couple of $1,000s. I mean, assuming you're one of the in-on-it type of corporations, it doesn't take anything. It takes a few steak dinners. And, you know, maybe some hookers and blow. And the Republicans will just hand you the keys to the Treasury. You can take whatever you want. Especially the Pentagon, as William S. Lynn put it, is the biggest honeypot. Its budget, it's the defense budget, $1 trillion a year. That's the biggest honeypot in the history of the world. And congressmen are a dime a dozen. Senators, two bits. That's it. Give them a little bit of cocaine. Give them a couple of thousand measly dollars. Maybe a couple of 10,000 to buy some TV ads for their next reelection. And they'll give you the keys. And the keys could be F-35 planes that cost $500 million each and can't fly in the rain and aren't stealthy at all. And you can't see out the window whether somebody's trying to kill you or not. And they're complete piece. Oh, and the heads-up display doesn't work. And sometimes the engine turns off for no reason. And it's... No, I made up the last one. But no, seriously, there's a list of 100 flaws in that thing. It's completely ridiculous. And so, from their point of view, they never heard of the question, why not have another Cold War with Russia? Who cares if they're the Soviet Union anymore? And truth ain't got nothing to do with it. Selling planes has everything to do with it. Selling planes to a captive market, the American people, with a gigantic police state pointed at their head. Pay up. That's all it is. And of course, Republicans, Democrats, and everyone else, they'll blame the poor all day. And, you know, it's immoral to hire the government to rob somebody for you, no matter who you are. But in this system, you could at least see why, if you're fair-minded, you could at least see why people think that, hey, as long as our entire American system since Henry Clay on has been the welfare for the millionaires, how about a little for me, too? That's what people think. I would prefer that everybody agree that we just abolish this damned thing. But that's the way people figure, and you can hardly blame them.
when you have, you know, Lockheed executives who are making $10 million a year salaries and better per year in their personal salary, their personal take home for their yacht and their Swiss vacations and their whatever. And for what? For selling complete piece of crap F-35 fighter planes to the government? I mean, you don't have to be any kind of commie or any kind of libertarian or any kind of any ism subscriber whatsoever to believe in a simple idea like, hey, how about whatever weapons should be made for at a cost basis by these contractors? I mean, if you're General Motors or you're Lockheed or you're whatever, you ought to be producing things that people want enough to be in business anyway. And then if you're going to make weapons for the government, there should be no conflict of interest there, ever, in an honest, open, democratic society like people idealize, like we're sold, that you would have, you would let these people have cost plus guaranteed no matter what, no matter what their overruns, no matter what, they get to always make this much extra on top of their costs. They ought to make this much extra nothing. They should have a no-profit ever contract that says, hey, GM, you guys are patriots. We need these planes. Make them. And, you know, sell cars to people for money. Make planes for the government at cost. It's your patriotic duty, and you don't mind because you love America so much, right? And, of course, if it's actually necessary, like, I don't know, stopping the Nazis, then they'll make planes and tanks and whatever's needed, right? The only reason we have an F-35 project at all is simply because it's welfare for people who own Lockheed stock and the banks that do the transfers. And just think about that. You know, you get some zillion-dollar transfer, tens of billions of dollars of money transferred from the U.S. Treasury to Lockheed. You think they don't stop at J.P. Morgan Chase on the way? Cut off a little percentage here for helping keep the Democrats in line, whatever the hell it is. Not like the Democrats need to be kept in line. I'm sorry, that was a lousy joke. They're purely loyal, no doubt about it. Anyway, they could get us all killed. And I don't mean to be that much of an alarmist, because I guess, look, they made it through the whole Cold War without getting everybody killed. Not that that precludes the possibility. But what they want, apparently, is to just reproduce that. As Tom Knapp puts it in his piece, terrorism, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, and these, you know, drone missions or whatever, that's penny ante stuff compared to gigantic new programs of building long-range bombers, submarines, and aircraft carriers, and gigantic welfare payments to useless people to make these weapons. Or, you know, if you want to argue that they're so useful people who the government is bribing away from doing things that are productive for other people. Just holding the whole world hostage and calling it peace. It's completely out of control. Everybody knows it too. You know, the fact that the government I'm talking about is the same one that just installed some Nazis in power in Ukraine, I think ought to be the end of the argument. I am afraid you are irresponsible with power. And here, look. These liberals, man, talk about missing the point all the time. Oh, Donald Rumsfeld compares Obama to an ape. Man, it was not a racist comment. He wasn't saying that. You know, a trained ape could do a better job of this, that, or the other thing. That has never been a fascist, figure of speech. As just calling anyone stupid of any race. There's never been anything racist about that. Or I don't know, I'm not the master of the etymology of it, but I do not think that that ever has been used or perceived as some particularly racist thing to say. It's just that Obama happens to be black. But what's the real point? Here's Donald Rumsfeld, the lousiest Secretary of Defense since they changed the name from the Secretary of War anyway. The guy who is guilty of breaking the laws against committing war crimes. Guilty as any man on this planet. And who's a complete idiot. Who's horribly wrong about everything and terrible at implementing anything and is just about one of the worst people on the face of the planet Earth right now, Donald Rumsfeld. May he get ill. And yet he sort of got a point about how Obama's foreign policy sucks. Now, of course, Donald Rumsfeld would just have him bomb more people. Donald Rumsfeld used to fill in the position of president during the war games in the 1990s and the continuity of government drills, and he would get us into a nuclear war every time, a full-scale nuclear war. That's in Andrew Coburn's book, Rumsfeld. And I'm over time. I'm sorry. I got to go. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.